This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long, running things behind the scenes. Want to tell everybody in the 4 o'clock hour, we'll have Jeff Nowak with us, Saints sideline reporter. He was in Baton Rouge for LSU's Pro Day. And at 4:40, Chris Gordy, you've heard him many times here talking about the SEC, Locked On SEC, but he is also the Houston Astros pregame host. So we'll talk to Chris about the Astros opening day and talk about a dominant team in the American League. They have been a dominant team. You just heard on the Sports Flash Will Campbell's comments about where he's going to play. Now, he got a different accent than me, but he sounds just like me. I mean, nobody's ever questioned where he's going to play. But now all of a sudden he comes out for the draft and they got all these analytical nerds of the world that want to move him to guard. No, Charlie, I'm not kidding.
Right. You're 1,000% right, but it's just funny.
They've never seen him play. Never. He is a left tackle. He's done that all his life. That's what he's going to play. But they got him every year. They try to reinvent the wheel with a player. And I'm just telling you, you're going to see more and more of it. They all captivated with this RAS,
yes.
All this stuff. Okay, all that stuff's great and fine, and you can look at it, and it's a piece of the puzzle. Watch Will Campbell play for 3 years. He started as an 18-year-old freshman playing left tackle at LSU. Not against no scrubs. We're talking about in the SEC. Okay, yes, you're going to get beat. Not timing too, but watch how good he is at that left tackle position. I've always felt he's the top offensive lineman in this draft class. He's going to play left tackle. I think it's funny that the two top linemen are not what I think most people would look at prototypical size. Armon Membu is 6'3", a little change. You know, and you look at the right tackles in this league, you know, they but does anybody question how good he is? And he ain't a massive guy. All I know is he whip everybody's butt every time he goes up against them. And so, man, Will, thank God you said what I think, because I've been saying that. I'm glad you said it. And, you know, Will's a country boy from up in North Louisiana, but he said it absolutely right. And yeah, if you got two tackles, I could see you maybe getting him for guard. But come on, he's going to play left tackle. in the National Football League.
Two teams he mentioned that have talked to him said that they see him as a guard, but that's because they have the two offensive tackles already in place. Mike, I'm 100% with you, especially because we both view him as a potential top 10 pick in this upcoming draft. Whatever team takes him is going to let him quote-unquote fail a tackle before they attempt to kick him inside a guard. And the thing is, Mike, I don't think he's going to fail a tackle. The stuff about his wingspan and his arm length is so overblown, it's absolutely ridiculous. As you mentioned, it's the analytics nerds. Oh, he has to have this certain arm length to be able to play tackle, or else you got to make sure they kick some inside a guard because he has to fit some sort of, you know, mold that they have for offensive tackles. I just don't see it. Look at the tape. We always, always, always talk about this, Mike. You always take the football player over the athlete.
Don't fall in love with the athlete.
Yes.
I learned that long ago, and the guy who told me, I always tell this to Bob, gets under his skin because it's Jim Finks. I just started doing this, and Jim had told me, he said, I'm going to tell you something, kid. He said, you got a good eye for talent, but I'm going to give you some advice. Don't fall in love with the athlete. Fall in love with the football player.
Exactly.
And that's always worked out for me. But, you know, you see Will and how good he's been. LSU has not had a first-round pick offensive lineman since Alan Faneca. He's in Pro Football's Hall of Fame.
And by the way, it's not to say that Will Campbell's not a good athlete. He's a fantastic athlete.
He is a really good athlete.
There's a stat that I remember reading about the combine, Mike, that there were four offensive linemen since 2003 that were 315-plus pounds, who ran a sub-5 in the 40-yard dash and jumped 30-plus inches on the vertical. Those offensive linemen, Trent Williams, 11-time Pro Bowler. Tristan Wirfs, one of the best offensive tackles in football right now for the Buccaneers. And then two of the draft prospects this year, Armand Membu and Will Campbell. Like, the one knock against him is people were freaking out about his arm length, but then he said himself today at the pro day that the combine measurements were bogus at points, so he got remeasured at the pro day, 33-inch arms. And so there you go. I think he's going to be fine as a tackle, Mike.
Yeah, he's going to play left tackle. He's going to have a really good career in the NFL. But again, and I'm telling you this, and long after I leave this spot, you're going to hear it, because they've gone off of these metrics. There's got to be a certain way. Charlie, when we show tape to receivers, high school receivers, you know who's probably got more film on there as a route runner and how to get into and out of a cut and a break more than anybody?
For this year's draft?
No.
Just in general?
In general. Over the last 20 years playing in the NFL.
Larry?
Steve Smith.
Okay.
Okay, is he prototypical size? Just take a look at Steve Smith. Well, man, you talk about a really good player for the Carolina Panthers, but he was such a great technician. And so when we break down film and show some of the high school receivers, watch how you run a route, Steve Smith dominates that tape.
Mike, there's also something to be said, going back to Will Campbell, about his mindset. Just listen to the guy talk. I mean, this is someone that, if I'm projecting the safest picks in a first round that's not loaded with blue chip talent, Will Campbell's got to be up there. He's got the right mindset for going
into
the NFL.
And now you done whizzed him off.
Yeah, no.
You can hear it.
You can hear it. And we'll play audio later on.
He ain't happy.
Just listen to, you remember that famous comment that he made, you know, postseason, about like if you get beat a couple times as an offensive tackle, all of a sudden you're working at Amazon, right? But if you're an edge rusher, if you beat the offensive tackle 1 to 2 times a game and get a sack, you're an all pro. So he knows what it takes to be a stud at the NFL level. He's got the right mindset. He's a very mature kid for his age. And just the production that he put up over his career at LSU, as you mentioned, a 3-year starter at left tackle in the SEC. He went up against the best of the best, and he still held up. I don't understand. I'm with you on the analytics nerds that are overthinking this thing with Will Campbell.
That's all it is. And yeah, athletes, you find them in the draft. But if you're talking about a first or second round pick, you mean production is there. Yes, we got one guy. Oh, you can take an athlete like the hoopster Jimmy Graham. Jimmy Graham did play some football at Miami. He did play some. But he was more of a basketball player. But you could see that guy could translate. Antonio Gates never played football at the collegiate level. Look where he's going to end up, in Canton, Ohio. But again, Antonio Gates and Jimmy Graham, they sort of the exceptions to the rule. And every once in a while, you find a guy like that that's a really great athlete with not a lot of tape
not for anything.
From a football standpoint. So, again, with Will Campbell, got plenty of tape. Just take a look at it. That cat can play. We'll be back with Jeff Nowak, Saints sideline reporter. Also, he covered the LSU Pro Day for us in Baton Rouge. We'll get his take on things right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike DeTillo along with Charlie Long and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, Saints sideline reporter, also our WWL digital content producer. And today he was in Baton Rouge covering LSU's Pro Day, Jeff Nowak. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
For sure, yeah. I made the long trek up I-10 and back in one piece, so that's always a good
man,
day.
You lucky, because, man, I've had to deal with that traffic. It ain't great. Not so much. And I always tell this to people, man, going to Baton Rouge or going to LSU in particular, there's always a new building going up somewhere. And everybody tells me, oh, LSU, man, they don't have no money. What? Who the hell's building them buildings then if they don't have money? So, man, you see it. It's like pops up like overnight. They building something. But LSU's Pro Day, and again, everybody's got one today as part of the process of it. And I'll get your take on this. Man, they made a big thing of it on television about how athletic and how a good receiver Mason Taylor was. Well, okay, I've watched him for 3 years. It don't take to go to the Pro Day to figure that one out, but he is so smooth. And everything he does as a runner, as a receiver, the way he finds that open spot downfield, if it's in zone or man coverage, he finds it. And man, I'm a big fan of Mason Taylor, and I'll never forget when he committed to LSU, this was under Coach O. And so I asked Coach about him, and he was like, hey, he got pedigree, and he's a big dude. And he's right. But, man, to see him out there today kind of solidifies everything we've seen for 3 years.
Yeah, so he did not participate in the on-field work. That was only Kyron Lacy, you know, Josh Williams, and then a few other receivers. And Garrett Nussmeier threw. He had his own throwing session today, which was kind of strange because it's not his pro day, but it was very much his throwing session. We can talk more about that. But, yeah, Mason, you know, 40-yard dash, 4.6, I think it was a 4.65 officially for LSU from them. I had him at about that time on my kind of hand timer. But what stood out to me is, like, yeah, you talk about Mason, and he's so smooth, and he's fast, he's athletic. But what really impressed me today, he put up 28 reps on the bench press at 225, which, for a tight end, that's a big number. And he did it smooth. Like, you see some of these guys, they get into the 20s, and they're reaching. You know, those last four or five reps, you could probably, like, you might not even count them. He was clean all the way through, like, 25. He struggled maybe on the last few. And because that's the question to me. It's not whether he can run routes. It's whether he can hold up physically at the NFL level, because he's not the biggest frame for a tight end that you've ever seen. But you have to be able to compete as a blocker. And I was just impressed with the strength he displayed there, because that's going to be the first question he has to answer to get on the field as a rookie.
Well, it's so funny. I got to talk to Brad Davis, the offensive line coach, in the offseason. I told him, Brad, before the start of last season, I said, hey, just tell Mason just to get in their way, okay? Just kind of shield them off. Learn how to be an angle blocker. You don't have to crush a guy. That's not what you're asking him to do. He was laughing. He was like, man, you're repeating what I'm telling him. So I think, man, you can see his niche in a certain offense, and he's going to be a nightmare mismatch for anybody downfield because of his size, his length, and you maybe he kind of guides you that maybe he's not the fastest or the quickest guy, and he is. And so he kind of catches you a little bit off guard because of the way he's built at the tight end position. He's a tall, skinny guy, as what you were trying to say. He's got that thin build, and that's there. The other guy that, man, I got a ton of calls about, maybe because I saw him a lot in high school from scouts that are kind of cross. Maybe there were Pac-10 or Big Ten scouts and looking at SEC guys today, is Savion Jones. Savion, when he was at St. James High School, right up the road from where I live, he was in the teens. I think when he graduated, he probably was 218, 219, somewhere in that range. Really good basketball player, great athlete, but he sort of has bounced around the LSU defensive line. He's played as a 4-3 defensive end. He's played as a 4-3 defensive tackle, a 3-4 defensive tackle, a 3-4 defensive end. He is a really good athlete. His chase down skills are really good. He's got some weight on him now that he can hold the edge very well in run support. And I think he's going to end up being one of those picks late in round, in day two or very early in the third day. And he's a guy that I know he's going to give you everything he's got out on the field. So I think he'll end up being a third, most likely a third round pick. If he bleeds, it'll be very early into round four.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think somewhere in day two would be where I would look for Savion. He didn't do a ton today. I think he feels comfortable with where he's at in this process. He ran the 40, and he ran a 4.74, which for a defensive end is a really, really good time. One thing I can say, so Brian Young is the Saints' assistant defensive line coach. He was out there today. He was leading defensive line drills. I'm sure they've taken some time. They've talked to him. So they definitely got a good look at kind of the athleticism. You don't send one of your defensive line coaches out there unless you're looking at the defensive lineman. And, you know, whether it's Braden Swinson or one of these other guys, Paris Shan maybe, you know, those are the guys they're looking at. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, Braden Swinson is the guy. Always Pete Jenkins about this. Like, what, you didn't know how to use him? He was like, Mike, I'm shocked as anybody. Because before the start of last season, a couple of assistant coaches at LSU had told me, hey, the guy to watch is Braden Swinson. Man, he's made really great progress as a football player, and it's his move, counter move to get off of a defensive lineman. I don't know if he did any work today. I didn't see, because I was watching on television. I didn't see him work out. But he's another guy that I think teams will want to watch because of his ability to get after the quarterback. And he would get out of that stance so fast. And then now he developed good hand movement. And I think he's another guy that'll end up going in day two.
Yeah, you know, I feel like LSU kind of has that reputation of, you know, that you have these defensive linemen who maybe didn't produce at the college level the way you wanted to see, but then get to the NFL and become kind of star players. You know, Danielle Hunter always stands out to me as a guy who didn't really produce in college, but you could see it, you know, the physicality, the makeup was there, and it was just a matter of kind of unlocking it. I kind of see Braden Swinson as one of those guys. I do want to mention, you know, the guy who starred today, you know, because like you mentioned, a lot of these guys didn't work out. A guy who did all of the drills and just blew away every single drill was Josh Williams,
yep.
A guy that I never really thought of as an elite athlete. You know, like you see him out there and he's kind of this hardworking, you know, grinded out player. He goes out there, he does a 42-inch vertical leap, which, you know, you can argue, hey, sometimes with the 40-yard dashes, it's like, oh, yeah, they're running downhill with a tailwind, right? Like you're getting a very generous time. You can't fake a vertical leap. He's done 42 inches. That would have been second at the combine had he been invited. Then he goes and runs a 4.45 in the 40, which I didn't see that coming. And then, you know, 23 reps for a running back on the bench press is pretty elite. It helps because he has shorter arms. He doesn't have to go quite as far. But, you know, I just think, you know, for Josh, he put a lot of work in to get to this point. He said when he started training a few weeks ago, a couple months ago, really, he was at 36 inches on his vertical leap. So he's put 6 inches on his vert. He said he had never jumped higher than 40 prior to today. So there was definitely some adrenaline going on. But, you know, I don't know where he's going to land in terms of NFL interest, whether he's maybe a late round pick, a seventh round pick, or a UDFA. But when you put up numbers like that at your pro day, people are going to pay attention. People are going to take notice. And that's all you can do if you're Josh. And it's for a guy like that, it's impossible to root against him. He's just a guy you want to see have success because he works so hard. He's already got 2 degrees from LSU. He was talking today about going back and potentially getting a third because he just loves school so much. So I thought it was cool to see him go out and do that today.
Man, to think he was a walk-on at LSU. And right. If we had more time, I would tell the story about that. But the thing with him is he came to one of our camps, not last year, but the year before. And, man, I told him, I said, man, I'm so proud of you and what you've been able to accomplish. And he looked at me and he was like, hey, Coach, I'm going to tell you something. He said, they keep throwing them at me, and I keep throwing them back. And so this year I got to meet him right before the start of the 2024 season. And I said, you still throwing them back? And he started to laugh. He said, I think we might have a guy here that I might have to make room for. And it was Caden Durham. And so he was right. He was a good evaluator on that. But, man, think of all these four- and five-star backs they've thrown at Josh, kept beating them. Now, this year he had to share that time with Caden, who is, you could tell, he's a tremendous football player. But I agree with you. Man, you see his hustle, his desire, his instincts as a runner, and he just keeps pounding at you. And he's a really good receiver coming out the backfield. I think that's something people maybe better take hold of because he can do that at the NFL level.
Oh, no, I agree. And he looked good in the throwing session with Garrett. Like I mentioned, it was interesting to watch Garrett Nuss go out there because, you know, it's not his pro day, right? But he went out there, and so you had
Chris Hilton,
yeah, Chris Hilton and Aaron Anderson as well and a couple other guys. So they basically threw an entire roster out there so that Garrett could get a legitimate throwing session a year early in front of scouts. I just thought that was an interesting decision because I remember a few years back when Jaden was throwing after his junior year to Kayshawn Booty and a couple other guys who were out there, but they didn't do that. They didn't make it a throwing session for Jaden. So I just thought it was interesting that they gave Nuss that opportunity to get out there early because I'm sure – you know, a lot of these scouts are out there. They want to get a look at him because he's going to be a guy that you have to take a long look at in the next draft class. So I thought that was cool for him to get kind of that advanced screening today.
Yeah, it's one of those previews because we know who they play game one in Clemson.
Right.
And we know it'll be quarterback for both of them. That other guy, man, he's pretty doggone good too. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always appreciate your time and insights.
Sounds good, y'all. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Jeff Nowak, Saints sideline reporter and also our WWL digital content producer here at the Big 870. We come back, Chris Gordy, who's on Locked On SEC. Today he'll be Locked On Houston Astros.
Woo!
Right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike to tell you along with Charlie Long and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line from Locked On SEC. But he's today Locked On Houston Astros. Chris Gordy. Chris, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Always good to be on with you guys.
Chris, man, you just think about it. Since 2017, the Astros, four World Series appearances. They've won two, lost two. They've won the AL West seven out of the last 8 years. From 2017 to 2023, they were the ALCS champ. So, man, you talk about a run. But also with that, there's also a lot of pressure. And every year, you know, kind of the pundits will say, well, this is the year it catches up to them. So you've seen them. Kind of give us your oversight on what to look for in the 2025 Houston Astros.
Yeah, I think what the Astros have done such a great job of, and this goes back to owner Jim Crane and his philosophy, is that they've never been on board with giving out those monster 10-year contracts. And, you know, they did a great job of, you know, when he first took over the organization, they bottomed out, and, you know, they built up through the draft, which is hard to do in Major League Baseball. I mean, it's easier to do in the NFL. You know, you can hit on a lot of NFL draft picks, first and second and third round picks. And in Major League Baseball, it's all a crapshoot. And yet they hit on some major stars, from George Springer to Carlos Correa, of course, Alex Bregman, LSU's own. So, you know, they did such a good job of that. But over the last couple of years, what they've kind of come to find is, you know, a lot of these superstars wanted to be paid big time. They wanted those 8-, 9-, 10-year deals. And the Astros kind of said, look, to remain competitive, we just can't do that. Because the minute you handcuff yourself to one guy at 10 years, you know, $300-400 million, you have no wiggle room to do anything else. So, look, on one hand, fans look at it and say, it sucks because you lose big-time stars, you know, like an Alex Bregman walking out the door. But they see it as staying flexible. So it's, you know, they still have their core of Jose Altuve and Yordan Alvarez and guys like that. But, you know, it is a new age where they traded Kyle Tucker in the middle of his prime to the Chicago Cubs. They let Alex Bregman walk to the Boston Red Sox. So it's a new day and age where they're going to lean on some of these young guys coming up through the organization to help lead them.
How will that look at third base, man, without Alex there? I mean, so many people here talk about it. We don't get a lot of baseball talk. But if it is, it's mostly Astros baseball talk. But, you know, not having Bregman there, I mean, he was such a fixture. But, hey, listen, you know, at this point in his career, you couldn't turn down that deal with Boston.
Yeah, and he wanted the higher annual money per year. He wanted a long-term deal. It just never came to fruition. But Boston upped the money per year, and that's how they were able to get him there. And, you know, I think the Astros, they wanted to keep Alex. They just weren't willing to go that high for a guy who's about to turn 31 years old and is clearly going to be hitting the backside of his career here. So, they made a trade when they traded Kyle Tucker to the Chicago Cubs. They acquired, Isak Paredes, who's a third baseman, who's a guy that they really liked at the trade deadline last year. You know, he's not as good defensively as Bregman, but they think he'll be able to fill in there. And, you know, for anybody who's ever been to formerly Minute Maid Park, now Daikin Park, out in left field, those Crawford boxes, if you're a guy who hits home runs, you love that left field and how short it is, where you can just get it over the wall there and hit a ton of home runs. And so far, Isak Paredes, at least watching him take batting practice, he's hitting a ton out there at Daikin Park. So, yeah, look, he's not going to be what Alex Bregman was, but I think offensive, you know, what's the drop-off? I don't think it's going to be as glaring. I think he's going to fill in just fine there. But the other part of that Kyle Tucker trade was a guy that they brought in named Cam Smith, who instantly became the number one prospect in the Astros organization. And the big story here in the last 24 hours was they announced he's made the opening day roster. And this is a guy who played 30 games in the minors last year. He was drafted last summer out of Florida State, and he's already been named to the Astros opening day roster, and they're actually going to start him in right field. They had tried playing him in the outfield this spring training, and, I mean, he was batting over .500 throughout spring training, guys. So for a kid who's 22 years old to make the opening day roster of a, you know, championship contender, I think speaks volumes about this young guy.
So a couple things here, Chris. First with Paredes, like just looking at his spray chart for his home runs, it just feels like he's going to feast with the Crawford boxes. So I'm really looking forward to that. The storyline with Cam Smith, though, I remember we talked with you a little bit, and this is a surprise that he made this quick of a jump to the MLB and the opening day roster and everything like that. But it's a very exciting kind of player prospect for this Astros team, starting out in right field as well. You know, the outfield was kind of viewed as maybe the weakness of this roster, but now you kind of plug and play this number one ranked prospect. I know the storyline as well with Jose Altuve shifting to left field is interesting and something to follow as the season progresses. But, you know, maybe the outfield isn't going to be as bad as we initially thought.
Well, I think, you know, the GM Dana Brown kind of put it this way. He said he thinks that, you know, that they can get Cam Smith to play an average right field, and they think they can get an average left field out of Jose Altuve. Jake Myers is the guy in their center field who's a plus defender, but his batting average isn't all that great. So, you know, sometimes we saw this, you know, even with LSU baseball throughout the years. You kind of sacrifice, all right, this guy's maybe not the best bat, but we know he's a plus defender in the outfield. And that's what you're getting out of Jake Myers. But, yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, there's going to be a defensive deficiency there with Altuve moving to left field and you know, Cam Smith a newbie in right. But there will be growing pains. They just hope that it's not, you know, ones and, you know, errors every night that's going to cost them runs and cost them wins. But it'll certainly be a downgrade from where the Astros were a couple years ago when they had George Springer and Kyle Tucker and, you know, Josh Reddick and guys like that running around out there.
And your thoughts on the opening day, kind of the starting five, so to speak, with Framber Valdez, the opening day starter. It feels like he's been the opening day starter for like the last half decade at this point. But the emergence of a couple young pitchers last year was something that I really enjoyed with Hunter Brown and specifically Spencer Arrighetti, who I covered at UL, former Raging Cajun. Yep. I love seeing him rock in his opening kind of season at the MLB level. But those two guys, Hunter Brown really had a breakout, and he was one of the better pitchers in the American League down the stretch. Your thoughts on those two kind of in the middle of this rotation for the Astros pitching staff?
Yeah, they say goodbye to Justin Verlander, who obviously will be a Hall of Famer and help them win those two World Series that they had here. But, you know, Father Time was taking its toll. It was time for him to move on. He's hooked on with the San Francisco Giants. We'll see what he does there. But yeah, I mean, Hunter Brown grew up in Detroit, idolized Justin Verlander, and there's a tinge of Verlander when you watch his game. His strikeouts, the way he carries himself on the mound, kind of looks like a replica of Verlander. And he was awful the first month of last season, but turned it around, worked with the pitching staff, the pitching coaches and the coaching staff, and turned it around and had a fantastic run down the stretch of the season. And, you know, Framber Valdez will be a free agent after this year, and there's some thought that Hunter Brown will be the ace of the future for the Astros. But the other guy you mentioned, Spencer Arrighetti, he's a Houston native, grew up going to games, you know, watching the Astros as a kid, played his college ball down the road in Lafayette. And I talked to him in the clubhouse the other day because his face is plastered all over the walls. And I said, hey, man, what a difference a year makes. I mean, a year ago, he's hoping to get the call up and make this roster. And a year later, he's now, you know, number three in the pitching rotation, and his face is all over the walls of Daikin Park. So it's, look, man, it's exciting because they have a nice core of pitching. Ronald Blanco was a guy who emerged last year as their number four. And then their number five is a guy that was part of that Kyle Tucker trade. Hayden Wesneski, that was really good with the Cubs, and he's another guy who's a Houston native. So it's, they're going to stay healthy. They're going to get Lance McCullers back at some point. He was a big part of their World Series run in 17 and 22. But, you know, health is always the big part of it. But, yeah, certainly an exciting time for a guy like Spencer Arrighetti, and a great kid who has, he's one of the brightest guys you'll ever talk to. And, again, maybe would have liked to see him get his college degree at LSU, but it's fine. He went to ULL and he's doing all right for himself.
Well, you stuck the knife in Charlie on deal, but it's all good, Chris. But when you dominate the AL West like they have, you always take, you move that head and take a peek behind you. Tell us the peak teams that may give the Astros maybe a run for it here in the West.
Yeah, I think the big one is the Rangers. You know, they obviously spent a ton of money the last couple of years in free agency and, you know, Corey Seager and Marcus Semien and, you know, buying some pitchers and all this. And then they drafted through the system guys like Kumar Rocker who have come up. And so I think the Rangers, you know, there are some people still picking the Rangers to be the favorites in the AL West. And you know, this thing's been hairy the last 2 years. It's come down to the wire. 2 years ago, it came down to the last day of the season for who was going to win the division. So I would say watch the Rangers. The Mariners still have one of the best pitching staffs in all of baseball. Their biggest problem has been offense. If they can, you know, get a little bit better offense, that they might be improved there. The Angels are just a mess. It's it's a shame watching a guy like Mike Trout, one of the best, most feared hitters in all of baseball, and yet he can't even make the playoffs there in Anaheim. And then, you know, the Oakland A's have kind of been the laughing stock, but man, they're starting to get some talent coming up. There's a guy over there named Brent Rooker that's actually considered one of the top 10, you know, up-and-coming hitters in all of baseball. And then Mason Miller, their closer, is a flamethrower that throws gas 100 miles per hour. So, the division's going to get a little bit better, but I'd still say the chalk would be to pick the Astros to win this thing. But it has been a lot closer these last 2 years.
You see, if Charlie and I would have bet money, he'd have won big. When you said Rangers, I know that would get under his skin. He ain't a Rangers fan,
but
Chris.
To be fair, like if you're talking about the, it's a good answer, Chris, because the Mariners have a fantastic, if not one of the best, rotations in Major League Baseball. They just can't swing the bat, and I mean it's a two sides of the coin, so to speak. But with the Rangers, they're definitely probably the biggest challenger for this Astros AL West crown. And I don't know, man. It feels like it's a new look Astros team. But I feel pretty good about this quote-unquote golden era continuing and then making it back to the postseason for what is now the eighth straight year?
Yep. Man, about a run.
How I've described it, guys, is people have asked, are they going to be as good as they were last year? Probably not. But it doesn't mean they're going to be bad. They're still going to be really good, just not as dominant. So still going to be fun to get out there. Hopefully you guys can come out and come see some games this summer and catch some action. We need an LSU guy. We got Derek Stingley on the Texans. We got Tari Eason on the Rockets. We don't have an LSU guy on the Astros. We got to find one.
I'll come my raging Cajun, Chris, and see Arrighetti pitch a weekend.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it, bud.
Thanks, guys.
All righty. Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC, but also he is the pregame host for the Houston Astros. Does a great job. Knows Major League Baseball, too. You can hear it, man. He gets it. We'll be back to finish it off here in our number one right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long. We return at 5:20. The head men's basketball coach for the Nicholls State Colonels, Tevon Sadler. Coach Boog will join us. And at 5:40, Mark Etheridge from D1 Baseball talking SEC series. And this coming weekend, LSU playing Mississippi State. We'll have a lot more sports talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.